The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Welcome back. Will O'Callaghan with you, sitting in for Matt on this Monday. It is time for The Last Word on TV and streaming. Delighted to say we've got Elaine Burke with us. Elaine, how are you getting on?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. Joe Shea is with us as well. How are you, Joe?
Hello, how's it going?
No, not too bad. Can we start with... So this is going to have a bit of a Paris theme about it, because we're going to talk about Emily in Paris in a little bit as well. But the Olympics finished up last night, Joe. We had the closing ceremony. I have to admit, it was quite a contrast to the opening one, which was high art. It was big ideas. Last night was a bit more like a concert.
It was mad because they were both done, the opening and the closing were both done by the same guy, Thomas Jolly. He was the art director on both of them, the main guy on both of them. And it was crazy, the difference between them. I mean, the opening ceremony has now gone down in history, really, as like, if you're going to do an Olympic opening ceremony on acid, that's basically what it would look like. And it was nuts, and it was controversial, and it was boundary pushing, and it was brilliant, and it was crazy, and it was stupid, and it was everything. And then last night, we get this very, very, very traditional kind of closing ceremony, which was fine, which it was great, very enjoyable, went down way, way too long, just like the opening ceremony. It was still fun, but it was completely different. It was very standard. And to hammer home the message, we had the highlight was Tom Cruise doing his, you know, Mission Impossible shtick and taking the flame off to Los Angeles.
A bizarre situation with Tom Cruise and all this as well, Elaine. So there's a massive Scientology building, which is right beside the Stade de France, which I think all the journalists and the athletes would have been passing by. We were wondering what we were going to get from Tom Cruise, and he ends up getting involved.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone was expecting some kind of a stunt. He's famous for doing them. And there was obviously then like a whole pre-recorded segment as well with even more stunt action from Tom Cruise. But I thought it was really interesting because you could actually see a change in tone. And I was actually thinking maybe the LA organizers directed more of the LA parts of it, because even though, yes, the event was more mainstream than the opening ceremony, it still was a bit more arty. And then it went full Hollywood when Tom Cruise turned up, and then it goes to what looked like Venice Beach, where you had Snoop Dogg performing, Billie Eilish performing, Red Hot Chili Peppers performing. But the highlight for me was the Phoenix medley in between. There was some great music to it, so getting a bit of live music, live concert, and also the athletes ending up on stage with Phoenix, and that wasn't actually part of the plan. That was one of the more fun moments, I thought, as well.
Yeah, it wasn't quite 2008 when Boris Johnson, then the mayor of London, just picked up the flag, and that was as much as London did. It was a bit more effort and panache put in by LA as they got ready for the handover here. It's going to be a tricky one to top as a TV experience, though, Joe, when it comes to the LA Games in 28, because I think Paris, there were some beautiful shots. Like, I remember at the end of the cycling where they just pan out and you see the Eiffel Tower in the background, and they use the city in this beautiful way throughout the games. LA's got a lot to live up to here.
Yeah, but LA is going to be completely different. And what they're going to do there is they're going to bombard you with Hollywood glamour. You know, and that's what it's going to be. It's just going to be relentless showbiz from LA, which is what you'd expect, because what Paris did was it played, obviously, to the incredible strengths. There's some beautiful backdrop, and it looked gorgeous and was classy. And the opening of the closing ceremony last night with that French singer, you know, singing Under the Skies of Paris, that was beautiful. LA will be completely different. LA will be hip-hop. We might even see the breakdancing make a comeback in a fantastic Australian woman. Maybe they might get a reprieve, even though they're not supposed to do breaking in the next one. So LA will be different, but I think LA will be fun as well.
Elaine, was there maybe a bit of an artistic lack of risk because of some of the blowback from the opening ceremony, or do you think this was always what was in mind?
Yeah, well, apparently the script was revised after some criticism of the opening ceremony. But I mean, how much could you change with so little time for these big productions? I doubt it was changed dramatically. And we did have that more artistic kind of interlude that was a bit kind of Cirque du Soleil with this kind of storytelling of a future civilization landing on Earth and uncovering the history of the Olympic Games. And I actually thought that was really beautiful and really enjoyable as well. It's probably one of the more forgotten about moments in it, though, because it did involve some big famous names in it. But I watched the full 2.5 hours of it, and I honestly wasn't bored. I did spend a huge amount of time just trying to find the Irish flag and the Irish athletes in the mix, though, because we didn't get a lot of airtime for our guys.
No.
Look, let's talk about Strictly then, because I'm not surprised, Joe, when I read this, that BBC News went out and spoke to some runners on the show and some of the staff in the background, And they haven't had the best of experience working on the show. So one said they were called stupid for asking for a handover, and another was allegedly screamed at so hard by a celebrity that they could feel the spit on their face. I'd say this probably isn't a great surprise for anyone who's worked on a big show, though.
No, I mean, this is the shocking news that, that TV and the media in general can kind of encourage bullying behaviour, can encourage diva-ish behaviour from people who maybe don't really deserve to their fame in the first place, or might be clinging on tenuously to fame. I mean, it's not a shocker, to be honest with you, and not just for people who've worked in TV, but also for anybody who's kind of fairly clued in. These are high pressure shows. They're made by people who are trying to desperately chase audiences. Strictly is such an important show for the BBC. The bad news, I think, personally, for Strictly fans is I could see this being the new series is coming back in the autumn. I could see this being the last one because it's just getting too difficult for the BBC to do. And this is the BBC investigating the BBC, by the way. It's just sort of like one part of the BBC is talking to disaffected, you know, behind the scenes staff, and then it's being made by, you know, BBC studios who are trying to say, listen, we have new practices in place, we're being very careful, all that kind of stuff. So I think Strictly is becoming too much of a headache for the BBC, and it's also incredibly expensive. I think this might be the last season.
Yeah. Elaine, the new names for the next series of Strictly, we're looking at Shane Ward is coming in here. People remember him from year two of The X Factor. One of the ones I was more surprised about, Tom Dean, the swimmer, the Olympic champion, who was in the individual medley only last week. So he's back off. No holiday after the Olympics, straight into Strictly preparations for him. You've got Jamie Bortwick from EastEnders coming in, and you've got Sarah Hadland from Miranda coming in as well. Do you share Joe's belief that this is a show that's coming towards an end?
Yeah, because I do think this was a discussion that was actually bubbling up before the scandal was hitting the Strictly crew and the choreographers and trainers and things like that. People were talking about a kind of dying off of interest in it. Like, it is still a tentpole production for BBC in the autumn, but I know people who are long-term fans of it who, for just reasons of things go on too long, have just kind of fallen out of favour with it. It's the same thing every year, essentially. You know, you have people who can't generally dance trying to dance, and then you have some good dancers who improve and are better dancers and win the thing. It's hard to innovate on a show that kind of has that kind of a formula and has been going for a really long time. Now, having an Olympian in the mix will probably be a bit of interest because we've literally just had an Olympics year, and apparently Tom Dean accidentally revealed he was going to be in Strictly after he had reached the final, so I think he might have let it slip in one of his interviews at the Olympics, so maybe that one had to be announced because he had gotten out there.
And maybe he was preparing beforehand, maybe this is part of his Olympics preparation, he was doing a bit in the dance floor. So Joe, we switch from one BBC internal investigation to a BBC documentary around Andrew Flintoff, and this is kind of opened up the window a little bit on the crash that he suffered when he was starring in Top Gear.
Yeah, I got an awful shock during the week. I saw pictures of Andrew Flintoff as he is today following that really, and I kind of brought home, and I don't think we knew how bad that crash was in 2022. I mean, he nearly lost his life while filming for Top Gear at an aerodrome in England. He very nearly lost his life, and he sustained very serious facial injuries. And it's affected him. And, you know, you can tell by looking at him, it's physically altered him. And this new documentary, the BBC is putting out, it's called Freddie Flintoff's Field of Dreams on Tour. And he's taking young cricketers and he's bringing them from his hometown in Preston, and he's bringing them on a cricketing tour of India. And I think, first of all, he's very brave to do it. And I've seen him, the interviews he has done talking about it. He's very, I don't know, humble is the wrong word. He doesn't make a huge deal of that accident, but you can tell how much it affected him. And I think this is going to be a very interesting document. It's going to be a very interesting series, because I think what you're going to see is Freddie Flintoff kind of coming maybe back from one of the most traumatic experiences that anybody could possibly have. I think this is really going to be must-see TV, because he's a great character. I think people like him a lot, and he's obviously been through a huge amount.
Yeah, if you want to check that one out, it's on BBC One, 9 p.m. tomorrow, and it's called Freddie Flintoff's Field of Dreams on Tour. Elaine, I would think we're not going to see Top Gear again. Top Gear has been, I think BBC used officially, they were going to rest the format for a while after that Flintoff crash, and it's been a couple of years now and we haven't seen it come back yet.
Yeah, the crash happened in December 2022, and it was while they were filming a series that never came out. So they have put it on pause. An investigation took place into that as well. So the BBC is just inundated with investigations into the shows at the moment. But yeah, I think, especially in the context of bringing out this documentary and seeing Freddie literally talk about the trauma that he's gone through since that crash, it makes it even more difficult to see a future where you have Top Gear back on the screen again. That kind of nature of encouraging fast cars and I mean, not reckless driving, but like, you know, the need for speed element of it all, like, it doesn't chime very well with him then relaying his experience. That is, I mean, he is talking about having constant flashbacks and crying every couple of minutes. He was practically living a reclusive life for 7 months after it. He really has been dreadfully affected by it.
Now, it's not all the time that we get two people on to review the TV and what's coming up. We find out one of them's involved tonight. So, Elaine, you're in this RT documentary, which is going to be shown on RT1 tonight. It is called The Cable That Changed the World.
It is, yeah. And I didn't pick it as my pick of the week because I thought it'd be terribly biased of me. But I do really want people to check this out because it's a story that I have always loved about kind of Ireland's technological history. It's about the laying of the first transatlantic cable, which, when you think of it, in the time in the mid-19th century, this was a radical idea to create a telegram link from Newfoundland to Valentia. And the reason why Valentia Island off the coast of Kerry was picked was because on a globe that Cyrus Fields, the innovator behind all this, that he spun, that looked pretty close to Newfoundland and it looked possible. But it was over 3,200 kilometres of cable being laid in the deep seabeds, deep ocean beds in the mid-19th century. Like, the things that had to happen to make this happen. And this is exactly what underpins our internet connectivity today, because we still use subsea cables. Like, well over 90%, possibly even 99% of the communications technology that we use is transmitted through undersea cables. We feel like it's wireless because our devices are wireless, but once it hits, you know, your mast and then the cabling infrastructure underground, inland, and then into the seas and oceans, it's primarily carried by these cables. And to think of that the infrastructure that built that kind of started in the mid-19th century, I think is really incredible.
I want to leave time for you to have your picks of the week. But Joe, I know you're going to compete against that programme tonight and you're encouraging people to watch My Tiger Family.
Well, I watched the Valentia thing because that sounds fascinating. But also, if you can maybe tape or catch up on later, My Tiger Family on BBC Two at 9 p.m. tonight. This is from an Indian filmmaker, Valmik Tarpar, who several decades ago left his Delhi, kind of nice life in Delhi, and went out into the tiger reserves and jungles of northern India to kind of start filming tigers. And this is what looks to be, I think it's going to be a fascinating look at one man's kind of obsession with these magnificent animals, and also interesting in how they have come back from the brink in some ways, and the tigers of India are now actually starting the stage of comeback. So I think My Tiger Family, BBC Two tonight. Tape it, watch the cable doc, but definitely tape this.
Right. There's one for both of you, Elaine. You can have first shout. Are you a fan of Emily in Paris as this gets ready to come back? Netflix midweek. You can stream from Wednesday. It was interesting. The Guardian went with the headline, a cultural phenomenon or complete tosh. And it seems most people fall one side or the other on this.
Yeah, and I do think it's kind of fair to say it's, you know, it's for a specific demographic and you may not fit that, and, you know, that's fine. And I'm not one of the fans of it, but I can see why people would be fans of it. It's glossy, it's kind of ineffectual, really. It's kind of candy floss television, really. It's been quite successful and quite talked about. I do feel it's a kind of show made for like an Instagram generation, in that it's like really high fashion, nothing much really happens, and there's kind of plot lines that involve her kind of talking to herself and then people popping up that are in the shower that she's in the bathroom. Anyway, I'm getting distracted there, but I just find the show as a description, it sounds a bit like a new version, more sanitized version of Sex in the City for people, because you got a woman working in the media, she's, you know, troubles in her romantic life, and she looks really fancy doing it.
Joe, you're a fashionable man. Do you watch it?
I get the Sex in the City comparison, I really do, but Emily in Paris makes Sex in the City look like The Sopranos. You know, I mean, it's very, very weirdly lightweight and superficial and on the surface. I can see, listen, everybody likes a bit of guilty pleasure and a bit of escapism, and why not? If you're into it, fine. I had to watch two episodes for my job, and I'm not getting that time back ever again in my life.
Yeah, for your job, right. Elaine, what's your pick of the week?
Yeah, so apart from The Cable That Changed the World, which I absolutely do want people to watch tonight, I would recommend Made in Korea, The K-Pop Experience. And this is another thing that's coming out on BBC. It's a 6-part documentary that starts on Saturday on BBC One at 5:15. And it's interesting in the context of what we're talking about, Strictly, and how challenging the training that they can go through for those shows can be. This is going to take a British boy band and put them into the K-pop machine. They're going to do what K-pop acts normally spend years doing in 100 days. And I think a character that's going to emerge from this that could end up being quite popular is Hee Jun Yoon, which is kind of like, she's been seen as like a Simon Cowell type because she's heavily critical. But she's heavily critical in a sense of she is talking up people that she knows are talented and she's trying to better them in a way. Now, it's still intense. The whole K-pop machine is very intense. But it seems to be kind of walking a line in that you're bringing back that kind of build a band show with hyper-criticism of them, but it's not necessarily exploiting people with no talent in not a lack of self-awareness kind of way.
All right, Joe, sell me your pick of the week there.
Very quickly, it's Bad Monkey. It's on Apple from Wednesday. A very lively, slick, a very knowing comedy crime drama. It's from Carl Heisen's 2013 novel. It's about a hotel. It's a detective who gets washed out of the police force in Florida. Vince Vaughn is very, very good in this. This is kind of escapist, fun, crazy crime drama. Good summer watch. Bad Monkey, Apple from Wednesday.
All right. Cheers, folks. Happy watching over the next week or so.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.